I can't tell you how excited I am about this show. I'm glad you guys downloaded it because it's going to be a good one. I can't tell you any person that I have enjoyed calling matches for more than Shawn Michaels. And Shawn Michaels joins us from his ranch at an unknown location somewhere in the state of, somewhere in the state of Texas. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very good, JR. Thank you very much.
How's the family? Good?
Everybody's wonderful, yep. Enjoying spring and finally getting out and, you know, mowing lawns and, you know, planting fields and stuff like that. So it's good that, you know, all the cold weather's gone and spring is here. So kids are got another daughter finished school this week, my son next week. So we're hitting the summer early.
Good, man. Good. I had, you know, some people that watch your show on the Outdoor Channel, Outdoor Network, right? Outdoor Network.
Outdoor Channel.
Outdoor Channel. I had it right the first time. McMillan River Adventures saw my epic hog hunt with Sean and that was, and Keith Mark, of course, and Josh. This can't leave Josh out. Josh might be listening.
Yeah.
And that hog is like talking to an old wrestler about how big the house was when he had the belt.
We were excited to have you down. We are going to get rid of all the hogs this year. They're tearing everything up.
Man.
They just, a bunch of more females were out there than I thought, JR, and they have multiplied. So we are going to, in about, 2-3 weeks, Keith and Josh going to come down here. We're not even filming it. We are just going to, got to get rid of them. Obviously, we got my taxidermist has got a church that is going to take the meat, and we are just going to do everything we can to get rid of them because they are tearing up all my pastures and just, you know, just wreaking havoc down here. So I've done all I could to, you know, to keep them down, but they're just getting out of control, so they got to go.
You know, and those that don't understand, it's an epidemic. And they are very, very destructive. The other thing you mentioned there in passing was that your taxidermist and his church, the fact that these animals are given, as I understand it, to like a Texas food bank, and all the meat goes to people that need it.
Yeah, well, there's two ways to do it. I mean, he has a local church that we give most of ours to, but in the past, you know, if we weren't keeping it, or, you know, if our freezers were full, there's Hunters for the Hungry, which, you know, I mean, between, you know, obviously across the nation, you know, hunters and outdoorsmen feed 250 million people a year.
That's awesome. And I think that's, you know, when I see the occasional tweet of someone saying, I know when I sent out pictures of that massive hog, you know, it was a, folks, I'm telling you, it was the size of a pickup truck. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. But I sent out these pictures, you know, of this killing this hog. Man, I got some fiery retorts from other people saying, "How could you be so cruel? And what are you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, what are you? What kind of animal are you to kill a
hog?" Well, we get it all the time, and that's something. You know, it's funny. Keith told me about that before he first started doing the show. Of course, you know, raised here in Texas, you know, hunting's, you know, a normal thing, and I didn't really know what he was talking about. And then, of course, yeah, it was a huge, you know, uproar with people, and, you know, people don't understand all animals. They need to be managed, you know, left to their own. They die much more miserable deaths, you know, starvation, disease, and things like that. About 2 months after you left. Heck, my wife and I were just up in the morning, and all of a sudden I looked outside, and I saw this deer. It looked like he was shaking, and all of a sudden there was another one with him, and it took me a while. And finally, I, you know, pulled up my Bushnells, and I got my, you know, got the binos on him, and you know, there were two deer locked together. You know, they fight, and they were locked together. The one was already dead. The one had already broken one's neck, and went down there, did everything I could to get him apart. You know, because he was blown up. I mean, and we couldn't move, and so I could get up on him every now and then. And, you know, finally, I thought, okay, well, the only way to get him apart is to saw one of the antlers. So, you know, ran back, you know, back up to the barn. You know, got a saw, got down there again, tried to get on him, and boy, he ran me over, about gored me. And, you know, one of those things, unfortunately, and, you know, too good to, you know, had to put him down. But they'll, the older ones, you know, these were two decent deer, and that's why neither one of them would get up. But, you know, the older deer get, you know, killed by the younger deer. And, you know, so, I mean, it's our job to manage them. And if you know anything about conservation, which, again, majority of people don't. I mean, they say they do, but they don't. You know, animals, you know, all of them, every one of them, they have to be managed. And PETA will go through more animals this year than I will likely in my entire lifetime. So you learn to roll with that stuff. I don't worry about it too much.
Yeah, good. Well, it's just good information for people to know that there's a method behind this hunting madness, and that people are managing these herds and are managing these animals. And a fan tweeted me and asked me, what did you do with the bison that you killed on Standing Rock Sioux Reservation?
Oh, yeah. We brought the meat home. I mean, we were allowed to have about a quarter of it, and then the tribe kept the rest. But I'm telling you, bison burger is phenomenal.
Yep.
You know, and heck, as you know, JR, heck, we live on 80% wild game. You know, Rebecca has just gotten phenomenal with cooking it, and that's why I'm much heavier now than I was when I was wrestling, because I am enjoying my retirement to the fullest.
Good. And you know that that bison's lean, and it's good, good protein.
So is venison. I mean, you know, deer isn't everything. I mean, it's a ton leaner.
Yeah.
And the thing is, people always think, well, you know, I always got to cook it the right way. It's just more preparation. That's all it is. I mean, it's, you know, phenomenal. Of course, you know, when we take really good care. I mean, I plant, that's what I'm doing tomorrow. I'm planting the food plot tomorrow and the next day, and protein. I mean, we take, you know, really good care of them as best we can, and that obviously that helps the meat as well. The better they eat, they're like us. You know, the better they eat, the more healthy they'll be.
Grain fed, man. That's down that big money aisle at the grocery store. If you go there,
I was just going to say, cut down on our grocery bill.
Yeah,
considerably.
It's a good deal. So things are rolling well in the McMillan River Adventures. I'm assuming you guys are gearing up for the fall. Another we launch a new TV season this fall, or is that the timeline on that?
Tuesday. I believe it's the premiere, the debut air date this year is July 1st.
Okay.
Tuesday nights, 11:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturdays. Starting up again, and then we're going to go with JBL and Michael Cole and fish in Bermuda this year and enter the big tournament there.
Oh, the Marlin tournament?
The Marlin tournament. And you know, we're gonna air that, and obviously, as you know, John does so much good stuff there in Bermuda with the, you know, with the young kids and his mountain climbing, and we want to tell that story, you know, and obviously show a side of JBL that, you know, that one he probably doesn't want shown because he's such a good guy in real life, we're gonna tell it anyway.
People ask me about that all the time. I said, Ben, don't you ever get pissed off about JBL knocking you on Raw? And I said, no. You know, that stuff is, he plays a villain on, his name's really not JBL.
Yeah.
Well, but he knocks you on television sometimes. I said, yeah, but it keeps me alive in the minds of the fans. And so, no, I don't really get too upset about it. That's kind of his role. He's a bad guy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one of the things, certainly those of us that, you know, you've learned not to take any of it very seriously, and God bless the fans. I mean, they, you know, if it wasn't for them, you know, you guys like you and me wouldn't have much.
But
you know, you do learn certainly, and when you step away, that there are a lot of folks out there, even though they have a tendency to say, you know, I know it's this and I know it's that, but they still are pretty certain that we, you know, think and walk around as wrestlers 24/7 when, you know, and I'm probably the worst at it. I never do, and you know, found it hard to even do it when I was at work sometimes, which obviously was not a great thing. But no, I mean, John, as you know, like John's a, you know, John does some very, very good things in his real life.
And yeah, he does.
As I say, he probably doesn't want anybody killing off his big heat, but you know, it's a story we want to tell.
He's like a lot of us. He overmarried. You know, he's
Well, as you say, one of the best comments I've ever heard. You certainly outkicked your coverage there.
Way outkicked the coverage. And him and Michael do a good job. And Michael, I think Michael just does a terrific job on the shows. It's a different show than what I did. It's a different style. He's asked to do different things than I was asked. It's not the same role that I had. It's not fair to compare him to me. It's not fair to compare me to Gordon Solie. Everybody had their thing. Everybody did their deal. And so,
yeah, well, all of it's changing.
Sure.
And that's, I mean, you know, I can remember when I first broke in, everybody telling me to slow down and to do this and do that. And I felt that it was changing as a number of other people. And it's a business that progressively does that. Who am I to say that it's changing the wrong way? I mean, it's continued to do that over the, for 30 years, you know, I was involved in it and still involved in it, and that's what it's supposed to do. So I don't worry about it too much. It always seems to, you know, if it needs to be corrected, it seems to self-correct itself. And so I don't give a lot of it, you know, much thought.
Right. The bottom line of how the trends of the business is that there's this thing called economics and buying tickets and television ratings that always kind of factor into, well, maybe we're going the wrong direction, because you'll get tapped on the shoulder that something isn't getting over or the presentation isn't quite right, needs to be tweaked a little bit by the empty seats or the television ratings or whatever it may be. And the good thing about it is that you can change it. You can call a different play, call it audible.
And there are so many different aspects of it now that weren't the same as before. I mean, we've all made our arguments and everybody's got them, but they're just, you know, there are a number of different things in play that we don't even know about, and that the people, you know, in the know, you know, they, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, where you and I would say, well, it's, you know, it's a whatever, a quarter hour rating. Don't worry about it.
Right.
I mean, you know what I mean? But those things have to be worried about by somebody.
And again, those
are just aspects I never got into. I didn't worry. You know, my job was to get in the ring and wrestle good matches. So that's all I focused on, and I figured I'd let the people that were smarter than me and were hired to think about that stuff. I was hired to wrestle, and so that's what I did, and didn't worry about too much else.
Yeah, and
I still don't.
And you know, as I said many times, if somebody says, who's the greatest of all time? You know, well, that's a very subjective question. You know, in my mind, nobody was ever better than you. Nobody. And I know that Flair gets a lot of, but, you know, before Flair, there were other guys that were really, Buddy Rogers was really good. You know, and Gorgeous George changed the whole culture of the business back in the day, but. So there's a lot of really greats that affected all of our livelihoods and all of our direction and where we are. But, you know, athletically, psychologically, and putting it all together, nobody did it better than you did, period, in my view. And that's
that's, you know, obviously high praise coming from you, and I appreciate it. But, you know, it's still, you know, it's funny when you're doing your promos, you tell everybody you're the greatest, and there was a time that I worried about it and thought about it, and that time has long since passed. I worry about being a good dad. That's my priority, and all that other stuff will. You know, I'm very thankful for it. I'm very appreciative, to get mentioned in anything when it, you know, involves, you know, something positive, and there's always negatives that come along with it. But as you said, it's subjective, and at the end of the day, there's going to be, you know, there's going to come a time that I'm going to stand before someone, you know, and, you know, on that final judgment, and he's not going to ask me about my wrestling. I always try to keep that stuff in mind, and, you know, and
good advice.
You know, again, I think about where I'm at now, and raising my kids and hanging out with them and, you know, trying to be a good husband and, you know, and a good buddy to my friends and stuff like that. And it's nice to have the time to do that and to focus on that stuff.
Sean, what did you think of the Undertaker streak ending at WrestleMania 30? Were you as surprised as I was?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was shocked. I guess even afterwards, I'm somewhat amused. You know, you check your Twitter and, you know, we hear the stories that are out there. None of them are accurate. And everybody was stunned. And, you know as well as I do. You know, one person alone makes that call. And you know, it's, you know, as much as everyone wants to think other people have some say-so in that, they don't. You know, I was stunned and, you know, like a lot of people. I've never asked. I was there when it all happened. I know, you know, what happened. But that's, I make the calls around here in my house. You know, that's the way things go. You know, again, for me, I'm leaving the next day. And I'm sure, in Vince's mind, he's got a reason. And, you know, so that's fine for me. And quite honestly, none of it's my business anyway. So I don't worry about it. I'm sitting right there, so I get privy to all of it. But at the same time, you know, I just grab my bag and go home like everybody else.
Yeah, you know, I said this on a podcast that because I was shocked that it happened. I actually watched the WrestleMania from the hotel because I was writing a column for Fox Sports as the show was progressing, and then I had to finish it up like a real sports writer, and when the game was over, so to speak, and finish up my last paragraph, and you know the. And as the clock wound down to zero, the score was, you know, whatever. So I watched it at the hotel, and I'm just floating along there, you know, and actually watched it from the green room. And the when I saw what went down, I said, wait a minute, that can't be. That can't happen. You can't lose. You know, so here's the deal. Here's what I told somebody. I said, I wouldn't be surprised if the decision for the streak to end didn't happen at the 11th hour or the weekend of. Could have.
I can tell you 4 hours.
Okay. So 4 hours before the show. Okay. So the other thing is that, which is interesting, if the reason was it was time and it was you're looking for something to shock and to really get people to flock to the WWE network, and it was the guy's 49 years old, and nobody, and you and I both know, nobody respects Mark Calloway more than you and me. My God,
right.
He's the man. I mean, he's Sam Houston. He's John Wayne. He's all those things. He's Davy Crockett. He's wherever you want him to be. He's bigger than life. So I saw him at the Hall of Fame about a little bit longer than I saw you, sitting in the makeup chair, just combing your hair, of course. But he hugged I said, how you doing, big man? He said, I'm good. And I said, how many more of these you think you got in you? And I was just, hey, I was BSing. You know, I'm glad to see him. And he looked good and lean. And I hugged him and man, he was, you know, solid. And he said, I don't know. He said, I'll let you know in a few hours. So, I thought, well, you know, we don't know. I don't know how he feels. You know, he's had surgeries. He's had hips and shoulders and labrums and rotator cuffs and, my gosh, knees. And it's not an easy business. He's played a lot of games. It may have been time, you know. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, I think, you know, all those things are true. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, again, I need to stop using that phrase. It's a banned phrase at the end of the day. But ultimately, all those things, they're true, that you said, but it still has no bearing on, you know, the outcome of a match.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a decision that's made. One person makes it, and you know, everyone has to abide by it. It's just that simple.
Yep.
And the reasons for that, but I I don't know. You know, I don't know. You don't know. And you know, I'm sure he does. And
that's good enough.
You know, like Mark said a number of times. You know, he's like, I've got the worst record with that man. I let's put it this way. I know, you know, I could find out all the ins and outs and stuff like that. I have no desire to. It was, again, not my business.
Right.
And so, you know, in my personal opinion, I think, you know, I would have liked to have seen Taker, you know, undefeated and then retire.
But, yeah.
You know, that's not my decision to make.
Yeah.
And other than that, I'll reserve all my opinions and everything else to myself.
I'm with you.
You know.
Hey, I'm still mad at Bruce. Fair. I'm still mad at Bruce Dern for shooting John Wayne in the back in the Cowboys. Damn
yep.
him!
Oh yeah, for sure. So, biggest heel in history.
Yeah. So, well, you think that Taker's wrestled his last match?
I don't know.
If you're just guessing,
I don't know. I know he was banged up afterwards. You know, I texted him and he just, you know, and you know, we shared some pleasantries and whatnot, and he said that, you know, he said I'll contact you in a few weeks when I find out the number of that bus that hit me and feel better, right. You know, feel better and stuff like that. He's got some outdoor stuff he wants to talk about. So
cool.
You know, I mean, my answer, I have no idea. And again, that's what I was saying. I just don't.
Yeah.
Think it's my place to pry. And
I'm with you.
Again, whatever decision he makes, I support it.
Me too.
And that's that.
I so much respect for him. Whatever he wants to do is cool with me. You know, I was so blessed at WrestleMania 25 when I wasn't exactly on the good list, and I was given the opportunity to help broadcast your match with him in Houston. And yep. I can't think of a more perfect match. You know, I thought, well, if I don't ever call another match, another big match, this is great. This is the way you should go out. And I have always believed that. Then I call one more Undertaker match at WrestleMania 28 when he wrestled Hunter, and you were the referee.
Right.
And that was it. And
we as you know, we lost the fight to get you in 26.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It all depends on whatever the day and stuff like that.
We tried, right?
But and that was phenomenal. That was a phenomenal match. And
which one you liked the better? I mean, which were the two? Do you have a favorite of the two?
Between Taker and I?
25 or 26?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. You know, I like them both for different reasons. I mean, obviously with my career on the line, that obviously added something. I think from a pure, just all-around match standpoint, I think everybody would agree that 25 might, edge out 26. Because as you know, it's very tough to, follow something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, that was sort of the gauntlet that was thrown down. And you know me, I mean, you can't really, I could, okay, well, that sounds like fun to try to do.
Right.
You throw in the added stipulation, and then you got something. But I felt that 25 was, I've always said, I don't think you can wrestle a perfect match, but I think that was about as close as you can get. And I felt like probably the closest I'm ever going to get. And I think those are the kind for me that I like to end on. And I think 26 was. Because of the emotion behind that, I think we did follow it, and that's just something I say, like, that's good for me. Time to reholster the gun, but let everybody know that it's empty. And could I go out there and do something again with somebody else? Yeah, but I feel like I don't know, you don't get that many opportunities to end it on which feels like that perfect note. And mm-hmm. I just don't like to, I mean, it's one of those people that don't like to mess with that kind of story.
Yeah.
Just for a paycheck, so to speak.
You know, I've told only a very few people, just friends, of the after WrestleMania 26 in Phoenix, where I didn't get the assignment to call your match, which I was PO'd about. And so, you know, just to be honest, you know, and this is my podcast, so I can be honest. And I'm not, I ain't no vendetta. I was disappointed. And who wouldn't be disappointed? If that's what you do for a living and you've been doing it for a long time and you didn't get to call that match, knowing what was at stake and how the lay of the land was, you're darn right I was disappointed. But what really was unique, and I'm going to write about it someday in some form, I hope, is after the event and all those tour buses were parked in that circle, that square across mm-hmm. from the hotel, and everybody was kind of hanging, that little group of guys, you and Taker and a few other guys were kind of hanging in that little area, and all of a sudden we all kind of realize it's like 6 a.m. or
right.
whatever the heck it was. I mean, it was like an all-nighter, but it wasn't like people said, oh, they had an all-nighter. It wasn't like an all-nighter, like it was out of control, insane party. It was like, it was almost like a family reunion, or it's like I don't know how to describe it, but it was probably one of the most unique experiences of my entire life. And by the time that I finally got to my room, it was daylight. I wasn't pissed off anymore. I was disappointed I didn't get to call the match, but I wasn't mad, because I had this amazing experience with two guys that I just thanked the world of and thought, man, how lucky am I? That was a cool deal.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, at both of them, 25 and 26, you know, because I never went to the after stuff, anything like that in those years. And as you said, the all-nighters weren't like the all-nighters many years ago. But that was what was so enjoyable, and just spending that time. And, it's funny, Mark and I gotten so much closer in our later years, and especially those last 2 years. And it was just, you know, as you know, for most folks, you know, you're going to Raw the next day and it's off and running to the next one. And it was just great to be able to take that time and to take it in, let it soak in, and just enjoy it with mm-hmm. each other. Mm-hmm. And we don't get that opportunity, or, you know, we didn't get that opportunity much, you know, at WrestleMania, because, you know, there's an old famous saying, you know, at Raw the next day, well, that was yesterday, and time to look the next year. And, you know, and that's what, again, I've, you know, even with the retirement, I mean, it's, you know, people get on me about how I don't, you know, I haven't watched a match in 4 years. I haven't watched, you know, I did what I always do. I watch it once when I get home and see if I like it, and then I put them away and I don't watch them. But I live on the memories and that time, you know, that time of just being with those individuals. That's, you know, that's what means the most to me, and I choose to just, you know, think about that, and those are the things that I enjoy, not sitting there watching the match, you know, 100 times over or things of that nature. It's getting to be with the real people and spending real time with them.
Yeah, I just I'm the same way. I have never in my career gone back and watched an entire pay-per-view that I ever broadcast, ever. Because I'm my own worst critic, and I would, as hard as Vince was on me at times on the headsets while the match was going on, just trying to make everything perfect is what he was trying to do. I get it.
Right.
And he wasn't the first alpha male perfectionist that I ever worked for, by the way. you know, so nothing, it was, everything was cool. But I was even worse than him on me, because I wouldn't. My wife said, "Let's watch. Okay, you watch it. I'm going to go out in the yard, or I'll go to the gym, get on the treadmill, or I'll go down to the Sonic and get something to drink. I'll see you later." You had that 4 year absence where you're hurt, and you're burned out, and everything was just, it was just time to step away. Can you relate to, maybe better than some, of what CM Punk apparently has gone through, and where he abruptly kind of left a pretty good spot? You know, the guys, well, we want to, I want to, I'll earn my spot. Well, he had earned a really good spot, and I'm sure he made some pretty good money, but he seemingly was burned out. Can you relate right. to his? And I know you probably haven't talked to him, but just his plight. Can you understand what? Because some people can't get it. That how could you leave something so idealistic, and it's not really yeah. that cool sometimes.
Yeah, no, I can easily get it. I mean, for sure. And because the thing is, if you're, I don't know, I'm sure there are some people who aren't good at it that still do it the same way. But, you know, the money and all that comes as a result of, you know, being passionate about it and loving it and really enjoying doing it. And when all those things sort of leave, you know, if you're the type of person that, you know, is really connected to the gig, the money's not enough to keep you there. And if it is, then you're probably not one of those, I don't know, I always say deep, you know, one of those guys that, you know, I can't do it if I don't enjoy it. That's, you know, and so no, I mean, I guess to answer your question, I totally understand. And I've, you know, I knew Punk, you know, fairly well, but you know, not as well as obviously some people. I have no idea what was going on. Wasn't there? Don't know. Never asked. Again, another one of those things. Yeah. I'm fine with everything not being my business. That doesn't matter to me. But when it was all said and done, I think he was unhappy, and he's the kind of guy that doesn't want to do the job if he's not going to enjoy himself doing it. And I totally relate to that.
Yeah, I think I can see some comparisons between you and CM Punk. In the intensity, in the being a perfectionist in the ring, and being happy, quite frankly, and not just doing what you do for a payday. And hey, Sean, I think this is a great place right now to end the conversation for this week. But folks, we're going to have Sean Michaels back with us next week for part two of this amazing conversation here on the Ross Report, because we've just got so much to cover and so much more to talk about.